We are Michael Veazey in London, England.
Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
More importantly, you are the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be. We're here to get you there. Let's jump in.
Publishing an audiobook as a part of your e-commerce mix is an amazing opportunity. And in this episode, we're going to break down the process and the promise of how to make an audiobook available to your customers as a part of your e-commerce product mix. Michael, you ready to jump into the great topic of audiobooks?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a really interesting one to me, actually, because I just feel this is so obviously an expanding market, but nobody in e-commerce is talking about it. So for me, that either means we're completely barking up the wrong tree or there's an opportunity. And I choose to think the latter.
Let's hope that we're not barking up the wrong tree. But so tell me about your personal use of audiobooks first. And we can talk about that just as an end user. Do you listen to audiobooks much or do you prefer the good old, you know, paper books? What's your preference as a consumer?
It's an interesting question, though, because I think I like all three. I think paperbacks are my favorite thing, but they're not so practical because we're running out of space. And a lot of people have that issue, particularly if they're in New York or London or somewhere without so much space. Second thing is that there's less of a division for me now. My favorite consumption is to get a Kindle, which is also enabled as an audiobook, which is beginning to be a thing. Okay. But I kind of veer between the two. Overall, I kind of prefer audiobooks when I'm busy running or running about town, you know, busy doing stuff. And Kindle for me is a quicker way of absorbing information when I'm just sitting down and have the leisure.
Yeah, the leisure. Yes. I don't very often sit down and have the leisure. So for me, audiobooks are really, I think, my primary tool for learning. I'll get an audiobook. My habits are very sort of well-worn at this point. I'll have a trip to do, you know, I'm going to drive somewhere meaningful, you know, maybe more than a half hour or something like that. And I'll deliberately find a new audiobook. And then that audiobook will sort of be my go-to content for my driving. Now, we live in Seattle area and we'll go to California frequently a couple times a year. That's about a 12-hour drive. And I like to drive it. And but I'll do several audiobooks. And in fact, this last drive was a couple of weeks ago, and it was a 9.5-hour audiobook, and I absolutely loved it. It was a terrific book, and so that's my use. I rarely sit down and just read a book for, you know, for enjoyment. That's not my habit. So I've always liked audiobooks. I've been an Audible subscriber, I think probably since, I don't know, 2007 or 2008. I don't even know how long. More than a decade, I'm sure. Okay, so have you had any experience poking around, learning about Audible book publishing process at all? Is this completely new topic to you?
It's absolutely new. I just want to reflect, though, just quickly on what you were just saying, that sure. I think what's very important for a Brit like myself to understand is just the vast distances. Like, you just drive 12 hours somewhere. In Britain, you can't drive 12 hours anywhere without falling into the sea, even if you go south to north. I mean, you get to the Highlands of Scotland in 12 hours, I think, unless your traffic was truly horrendous. Also, the idea of a 12-hour drive, I had some Canadian friends over in Britain once, and they said, yeah, we thought we'd go from London to Edinburgh, and we looked on the map, it's only 400 miles. And then we got back and we went, we're never doing that again, because in Canada, you just sit there and nothing happens except a bit of driving and listening to radio or podcasts. In Britain, you have to sweat through the traffic and the stress. So it's a different kind of life. The second thing to reflect on, it's kind of obvious, but yet so obvious you can miss it. The second thing is that in Britain, we have a much more integrated transport network than the US, not because we won't run transport well here. It's just a tiny country. And the third thing is, if you live in a city like in London or New York, you tend to transit by public transit or public transport. Yeah. As opposed to driving. So it's interesting that the car and audio book consumption are so linked. And I just thought it was worth reflecting on that and thinking about that, whether that relates to your own market.
Well, I think that's what fuels podcasts as well. And I think it fuels audiobook listenership as well. And those are, in my mind, those are similar modalities for people in that situation. I think, you know, when we visited London or England, we were in Birmingham in London, we took the train. And we had so much fun. I was like, we're on a train. But it was rare. I mean, that was just a unique feature of the trip to us, and but we really enjoyed it. So if I was in that context, we also took the train out to Kew Gardens, by the way, which is amazing. I would definitely do audiobooks on the train. Although, see, I could see myself doing Kindle a bit, but I wouldn't. I don't think I would. I would do just audiobook, even if I was just sitting there not driving myself, you know.
So just to summarize on us as a tiny example of market, I guess it sort of divides into people who use audiobooks when they're driving, but not the rest of the time. That would be me, for example. I know people who are just massive audiobook fans, full stop. And it'd be worth knowing that, wouldn't it? Because if you know about your audience that they love audiobooks, and I guess in the end, if you've got an email list, you could just ask them, then you would be able to prioritize that earlier than, say, people who have a lot of Kindle readers or whatever. So interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So having not done this, no, I mean, it's something I'd be very tempted to do, having done a lot of podcasts. And so my first question is, why bother? Because obviously it's more work and it's an additional step in addition to getting a book published, which the value of which I am convinced of, and I have yet to get round to it, but that's something I'm intending to do this summer. So tell me, why do audiobooks at all instead of just Kindle, for example?
Well, I think it naturally flows out of the idea of publishing these days. I mean, if you're going to do a book, the question would be, why wouldn't you do the audiobook? You know, it's just that natural a process. People have proven with their wallets that they want audiobooks. They like podcasts and they're willing to pay for audiobooks. So, I mean, I think it's a logical extension of a book project. So, and you know, we've already done what, 2 or 3 episodes on publishing a book in association with your e-commerce product. And again, if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm not an info guy, I don't care about, you know, being an author, we go back and listen to those episodes. We make a case for you as an e-commerce seller of a physical item or a widget or whatever you got to actually make a book in association with your, you know, product for your end consumer. And there's value there. And your customer would be served well in many, many, many niches by an interesting book. And so this is a logical extension, I think, of that is really the smartest rationale for doing it.
That does make sense. And I guess, therefore, we probably don't need to go much more into how it fits into a digital product strategy. I guess it's pretty much the same as a book, right? If it's an audio book. Do you think there are any differences at all, or is it just purely an extension of an ebook or a physical book?
Well, the classic marketing questions are, you know, product, price, placement, promotion. And so, you know, if you've got this as a standalone product or another product that would be closely associated with your Kindle version and your paperback version, then the question is, you know, do you promote it differently, you know, have it on different marketplaces? And in my view, it's really like having, it's almost like what you would call having an integrated product suite available to customers on Amazon. So in, you know, you've got your Kindle version, you've got your paperback version, and you've got your Audible version, your audiobook version. And that integrated product suite is a well-worn 1-2-3 punch of product integration. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, I think that's the way to approach it. I don't think there's any unique value. Like, you know, I think most authors who would do an audiobook are doing it for the Amazon platform, just so it's associated with their Kindle and their paperback book. There's no additional huge opportunity, in my view. I mean, you know, maybe people geek out over this and think there are different opportunities, but in my view, it's just about serving the Amazon, you know, customer. Yeah.
And for once, actually, this is a very straightforward strategy to bolt onto your business, even if you're an Amazon seller, unlike a lot of things, because Amazon happens to cover all three very well, right? Physical books with CreateSpace, audiobooks and Audible, and of course, Kindle, which is huge. And they've sort of popularized the ebook. All right. So having established that it's a good idea, what's the process like for ebooks, audiobooks, I should say, as opposed to just ebooks? Yeah. Or what's the additional process, perhaps, is a better question.
Yeah, most people will be familiar with how Amazon purchased CreateSpace for paperback. And then what most people don't realize is Amazon also purchased a different company called ACX for audio publishing. And ACX is really the back-end system that enables or empowers this whole process. In fact, fact check my lore there. I might be wrong. Maybe they created it originally, but I think they purchased it. But anyway, nonetheless, acx.com is the site you go to. Most people will have never heard of that because it's really just for the publishers. And so it's a very straightforward process. In fact, I would even call it fun because you've got your book finished. You know, at this point in creating an audiobook, you will have started with a finished manuscript. And so the process is pretty straightforward. You go to ACX, set up your account, of course, like you would on any other marketplace, and then you add your book to ACX. And then this is kind of the interesting part. You have two choices. You can either record it yourself, or you can hire a voice talent person, like a for-hire person, to read your book for you. And they can either be paid a slice of the royalty, like they actually get an ongoing royalty payment, or you can do a one-time payment for them. And the review process for who they are and how they get chosen is actually really fun. It's like when I did this, and I did, just as full disclosure, I've done this for one of my self-published books, and that was Craft Business Power. And then I had it done for my traditionally published book, Instagram Power, by McGraw-Hill, the company. And so I'm familiar kind of with self-published author versions of this and traditional published author version. So anyway, you get to review the voice talent if you're in control of the process, if you're self-publishing. And it's fun. You can say, hey, I want a younger British guy, maybe some kind of, I don't know, there's like different versions of British accents. I don't even know, but Michael, of course, is your area of expertise. And you can describe what you want, or you can say, I want an older Australian sounding lady. And then magically, a few days later, all these clips pop in of, you know, you give them a sample, like, you know, 400 words or something, and you get to hear these people reading your book. It's really fun. And so then you get to just pick the finalist, and they record the whole thing. And then it gets, you know, published. You review it, of course, and then it gets published, and then it gets bolted into the Audible system on Amazon, and it's a hoot. And there you're off to the races making money with your audiobook.
Sounds fun. I mean, I can really imagine that would be quite cool, getting to audition people reading your own words. Although it must be quite strange to hear other people reading words back that you've written and you've crafted and sweated over. So just tell me briefly, why would you outsource this instead of narrating it yourself? I mean, you're doing a podcast now, and you speak very fluently and have a good speaking voice. I mean, what was the thinking behind outsourcing that?
Well, with Craft Business Power, it's technically authored by Cinnamon and myself. And so I had this choice. Okay, do we have a reader of the text be a male or female? And is it Cinnamon or me, or is it a voice talent, male or female voice? And so then my first question was, okay, who's my audience? Like, well, my audience is actually probably Etsy sellers primarily. And I would imagine 95% female. And then I was like, okay, would a female listener prefer a female voice? So I kind of went down that logic trail and thought to myself, well, first of all, Cinnamon's not going to read it, and I'm not going to read it. And we could describe why, you know, like why we wouldn't do it ourselves. And then, I thought, okay, I'll find somebody who's younger-ish, American, accent, and have that voice actress read it. And then, so that was what we did. And as it happens, the person who read the book was a Broadway actress. And I guess a lot of Broadway people do this as like a side hustle. Like, who knew? But, you know, it gives them a chance to practice their whatever voice intonations, or, you know, just their style, and make a side gig happen for them. So yeah, that was kind of the thinking.
Interesting. I mean, I have to say that I think it's interesting to hear about the process, having not gone through it myself as a producer of an audiobook, but having experienced occasionally some authors who are well known for speaking a lot, and there's a lot of material out there. I'm thinking of Tim Ferriss particularly, for example. Yeah. There was a lot of YouTube videos out then just before the 4-hour work week came back and around that. And he'd written a blog primarily. So writing was his main, I guess, form of expression that he was ultimately would identify himself with, but since, of course, become incredibly famous for his podcast. So he's obviously a man who can speak and speak fluently, but he chose to outsource the 4-hour work reading. Now, on the one hand, as an example of outsourcing, which is what the book was half about, it makes total sort of sense as positioning. But on the other hand, the guy he chose spoke very differently to Tim Ferriss, and I found that quite jarring to my ear. And then also, he just clearly didn't know anything about digital marketing, whatever. I remember that the low point was when he said, Auber is a very good email marketing system. And I thought, Auber, what is Auber? And then I looked it up. I thought, oh my goodness, he means AWeber. So clearly nobody had briefed the guy. So the only thing I would say from that experience is brief the person about really obscure to the normal person or Broadway person. Also, I just found the style was a bit weirdly different from Tim Ferriss. So, yeah, that's one thing that struck me. I mean, it's now, probably not enough reason for Tim Ferriss to spend his life writing a book and reading it, I guess.
I had the opposite experience because I had never heard of him before. And my first encounter was with the audio version. So that book, and I just as a total side note, I had a job back then. This was probably, what, 2005 to 2007. I had a job back then where I was traveling all the time. I was in San Francisco Bay Area as a major gift fundraiser for a charity, and I would drive all over the San Francisco Bay Area to meet with people. And I dreamt of being an entrepreneur. That was when I still had my 9-to-5, you know, full-time job. So I dreamt of being an entrepreneur. So I listened to that audiobook. I would say probably, I mean, once a month for 3 or 4 years. I listened to it that many times. I mean, I can almost quote you verbatim, that book. So that guy's voice, I love that book so much. And I had, you know, his voice was ingrained in my mind. So I had the opposite experience. So then when I heard Tim speak or in subsequent listen to his podcast and stuff, I'm almost anchored more to the original voice talent guy.
That's hilarious. He's created a sort of avatar that is more real than the real person. That's funny. But okay, so we obviously have options to read it. And quite a few people, just to clarify that, my experience of listening to business audiobooks is that a lot of people do read their own stuff, particularly if they're used to doing speeches. The speaking engagement type people, I was listening to Peter Zian, for example, reading his own book, This United Nations, fascinating book about geopolitics, or Jim Collins, who wrote, you know, Good to Great and so forth. Obviously very comfortable with speaking as well. So I guess it comes down to horses for courses. If it's not for you, it's a totally solvable problem.
It doesn't. And I think that also, just as my own reflection on it, I think what I've heard from other authors is that the thesis is that if you read it yourself, people will bond with you more. And what a lot of authors do is they take it as an opportunity to embellish some of the writing as well. So, you know, I've listened to a lot of authors who will read their own manuscript and then they'll just literally say, okay, wait, time out. I just want to say blah, 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 blah. And it actually makes the audio version really fun and enjoyable. And I guess since they're ultimately in charge, they can do that. So that's a different angle. But I do think there's value there in reading yourself. I tried that actually once for a book and I just couldn't do it. I would say, all the time. It's like I couldn't read properly out loud. It made me feel like a kindergartner, but I was like literally stumbling my way through this. They were my own words, for goodness sakes. And I couldn't do it. And I realized it's like a very difficult thing to do, to read out loud for hours on end. So after, I think, 2 or 3 chapters, I said to the guy, because this is a self-published project, I said to the guy, I think I'm going to edit these next chapters. Let's circle back and pause here and we'll pick this back up in a few weeks. And I totally abandoned the whole thing. I never went back and I never finished the job. Because I say, see, I just did it again. And although these ums now, you know, our podcast editor can't edit out all these ums, but I do it all the time. Yeah. And so there you go. That's it. But one of the downsides of trying to do it yourself is, are you literate enough to read it out loud? Apparently it's hard.
Yeah, I think it's a specialist skill. I mean, they call it sight reading for authors, and it is for actors, I should say. Sorry, I can't even speak English myself. And I've worked in a lot of acting schools with my pianist hat on back in the day. And they teach it as a specific skill. And some actors probably are good at it and some not. And the ones you get doing it are the ones you happen to have an ability to speak fluently without adding extras. And actually, it's quite hard, and not to do it in a monotonous voice as well. Anyway, so I guess what we're saying in summary is you don't have to do it yourself, and it's perfectly fine to outsource it, and it's very doable. Presumably it costs a bit more. Let's talk about price and sort of price structure and profit structure. So tell me about the price of audiobooks compared to ebooks, for example, in your experience.
Just on the front end customer pricing, they tend to be higher priced. Obviously, Audible is a subscription service. Many of us should take a cue from Amazon and set up our own subscription services like they have. But yeah, it's a subscription. So you get, depending on the plan you're on, a credit for a book, which makes the price irrelevant. And so what we see happening, I think, is that the audio version will be listed on Amazon and it'll tend to be higher than the Kindle version or the paperback version. So, you know, you kind of have best of both worlds. You can push the price higher. And then if it's a standalone one-off purchase, you know, you've got more of the royalty money, which we can talk about how that works. But, you know, but there, if an Audible listener is consuming it, they'll just use one of their credits and whatever pricing plan they're on. They don't, you know, don't even think about it in that way. So that's kind of the front end pricing. And then on the royalty side, you get 40% royalty through the ACX system as the author. And then you can hire that voice talent person we talked about with incentive of a sliver or a part of the royalty. So they, you know, they have the opportunity to actually work for free on the front end if they're willing to, with the presumption that they'll make some money off of this over the long term. And then, or you can just pay them one time, a one-time payment. And it's hundreds of dollars, not thousands. I think it might be $400 or $500. I don't know. I haven't done one of these for a while. My Craft Business Power book was years ago. And so, but those two choices exist. That's kind of how it works on the back end side.
Great. And how does that compare with an ebook or a physical book through CreateSpace?
Yeah, I think it's one of those deals where it depends on what plan you sign up for. As for example, the Kindle publishing exclusive track or non-exclusive. I think exclusive, you get 70%. But really, I mean, the way they do the math is kind of squishy there or kind of not real clear. And then if you're non-exclusive, I think it's 35%. Correct me if I'm wrong, somebody at some point in the comments, but I think that's kind of the way it works. So I would say it's comparable, although the price point is higher. And so you end up with a, you know, a good chunk there from sales.
So overall, thinking about the is a mini business model, I guess, or a product, you've got a higher fixed cost up front if you pay your author a lump sum. And I guess, have you ever tried paying people just through royalty? Because I presume that would be quite a lot of faith that the voiceover artist would have to place in your ability to sell quite a lot of copies, right?
Well, actually, what's interesting is I did set up the Craft Business Power book through the royalty split. And honestly, I just don't remember the percentage that I gave away. But what the percentage I have available to earn is 40%. So, and I'm not detail oriented enough to go back and have parsed any of that out. I can tell you, because I'm logged into my ACX dashboard at the moment, that I have sold 997 copies of Craft Business Power audio version. So please, if you're listening to this, buy a copy so I can get past 1,000. That would be so great, wouldn't it? If you're into Etsy and that kind of thing. But
absolutely. I think one should probably buy it just again to get an impression of what you're talking about. The best way, honestly, the best way to find out how a marketer does stuff is to go through their funnel. And this is part of your product strategy and we're discussing in detail. And you can even listen and think about, you know, the quality of voiceover artists you hired and whether you like it. So I would suggest absolutely do that. And, you know, that would be nice to push you three whole copies to get you over 1,000 would be nice. But joking apart, it does sound like actually there's a fairly decent relationship between the relatively mild cost. If it's a few hundred dollars to get someone to read an entire book, which sounds like hours and hours of work, then that sounds like a pretty good value to me. And if you get higher price at the front end,
I didn't choose that path, so I'm not sure what the actual dollar amount is. So you know, somebody who's more informed on this can tell us. But and that was years ago, so it maybe is more than hundreds. I don't remember, to be honest. I'll tell you a different angle though on this whole thing, and that's if you're a traditionally published author. Like with my Instagram Power book, just before this show we recorded, I looked on Amazon to see if my Instagram Power audio book, you know, how it was doing and how it was ranked and that, and I couldn't find it. It's not on Amazon at this moment, and I have no idea why. So I literally, before we started the recording, I emailed my acquisition editor and just asked the question, hey, my book, which was there a few months ago, last time I looked, it was on Audible and it was on Amazon connected to the paperback and Kindle, and it's not there right now. So these are the vagaries of, you know, publishing. But if you do it yourself, you've got a lot more control. You see the details, you see the numbers, you're in control of the process. If you do it through a traditional publishing house, then of course you know, it's more obscure to you as the author, because other people are pushing the buttons and it's under their account, that kind of thing.
Interesting. I guess that begs the question, which I'm not sure if we addressed when we were talking about ebooks. So it's not an audiobook specific question, but I guess it comes to the question of doing stuff yourself versus getting published. Yeah. And I'm saying that like it's easy to get published, and presumably that's quite hard. But what are your thoughts, having done both quite a lot? Ooh, what are your thoughts on that one?
That's worth, I think, a whole podcast, because there's actually three. There's three chunks to that. There's self-published, and then there's, you know, on the one hand, let's call it, on the far right-hand side, let's say it's self-published. On the far left-hand side, it's traditionally published. But in the middle, there are models that are not vanity publishing. They don't call it that anymore. But there are models where you do have access to tools and resources for publishing that are better than doing it yourself, I guess you should say. And so there are actually three buckets to really talk through. Happy to do a whole session on that if that's of interest. I do think it's an opportunity. You know, we as e-commerce sellers just need to think holistically. I was literally standing yesterday in a beautiful garden store, giant greenhouse. It's a local, really nice gardening center. And my wife was looking for plants. My wife and daughter were shopping around. And I was just standing there looking at all the books published, you know, for gardening, bird watching, the, you know, flower gardening, like cooking recipes, just a beautiful book section. And, you know, so again, if you're an e-commerce seller, I would just encourage you, think about the books associated with your niche or industry that you can push through these types of tools and process, make a new product for a customer. So anyway, so I think we should do a whole episode, I would think.
Definitely, yeah. I do think that here's what I, reflecting on the last, I don't know, 15 years of online marketing type experience I've had, I mean, most of it sort of very much side, small part of my life until, say, 5 years ago. But there was such a big deal made about ebooks and, you know, back in the day, people sold DVDs and tape sets, and, you know, Tony Robbins probably made pots of money years and years ago selling tape sets that people would listen to in their car, so audiobooks. And then, on the other hand, all the big noise about e-commerce in the last few years, and of course, Amazon particularly. But really, the combination of the two does not feel to me like it's been really discussed elsewhere. And so for me, that says opportunity, because sooner or later, the way these things work, somebody's going to listen to our little podcast and publicize it on something with a ginormous audience and say Amazon sellers should all be selling ebooks, and suddenly everyone's going to go around saying everyone should be selling ebooks, and it will become a thing. So I do honestly think that this is a great opportunity, because it's very obvious from a business logic point of view, but it just doesn't happen to be fashionable yet. So I do think it's something everyone should at least consider. And I think it's worth just finally reiterating again to get over a mindset block. Just because you don't think you're a producer of words and you get physical products made for you, well, you're not a producer of physical products either in most cases. Most of us do not have a factory in our back garden. Right. So I think we can get over that reasonably quickly if we're willing to collaborate with somebody, just as I would collaborate with the 3D physical product designer when I'm making a physical product and getting it manufactured in China. Thus, I would also collaborate potentially with an editor and so forth. We talked about that in detail.
That's right.
So it's not like it's not out there. And I just want to really encourage people to reconsider that, because I just think, for me, I'd be very excited to listen to this if it were new to me. And I'm still think it's very exciting now. I think it's a big opportunity. So look, let's bring this one home. First of all, tools of the trade. It sounds like ACX does most of the work. Are there any other things we need for audiobooks specifically?
I don't think so. It's just, you know, finish your manuscript and then go check out acx.com, learn their process. It's very straightforward. They have videos and, you know, a step-by-step guide, and you need to go from there. So it's really a very, very logical next set of steps. And I'll just tell you, as a reflection on what you just described for the physical product manufacturing space, it is much, much simpler to do a book and to have it published and have it published on Audible than it is to do a physical product through China. I mean, for goodness sakes, the level of difficulty to do a good private label product in China through China or any manufacturing company and have it sold on Amazon, which is not an easy marketplace backend, you know, Seller Central is not easy to navigate. I mean, we work with clients every day, and Kyle, my business partner, coaches on Amazon detail in depth. And I'm looking at those systems saying to myself, you guys, if you can do this, you can do books all day long. They're so much simpler. It's not as complicated. So if you've learned to do a triple backflip selling, on Seller Central, then you can definitely do one backflip, you know, getting a audiobook published for real. I mean, it's much simpler, to be honest.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, you heard it here first, folks. I think we can't really top that, except to say that if you're enjoying these episodes, it's great. The one downside of podcasting, we talked about before, is that it can be a little bit into a vacuum. So we'd love you to give us some feedback. And the best way of feedback, of course, is reviews. We'd be delighted if you email us as well. And you can join our email list at theecommerceleader.com. But also, yeah, any form of reviews. And last thing to say, of course, if you're liking it, don't forget to subscribe so that you get more relevant information straight to the top of your favorite podcast app.
That was the E-Commerce Leader podcast with Michael Veazey in London, England.
Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
We offer you free help on our website, including PDFs, videos, and mini courses on topics like traffic, product, and sales channels. Some are for Amazon, most are for any sales channel. To get those and to stay up to date with our podcasts, go to www.theecommerceleader.com. Thanks for listening.